Azure SQL Database with Anna Hoffman.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. And lots of speakers out there are doing user group speaking. So if you run a .NET or Azure-related user group, I and many others would love to give a presentation for you. Just reach out. The sponsor of the podcast is ClearMeasure, and they make this podcast happen. ClearMeasure is a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. So if they can help, please get in touch. And if you're a .NET software engineer who wants a path to become an architect, ClearMeasure is hiring. You can go to clearmeasure.com/careers. And before I leave the hiring topic, I'm looking for a R&D software engineer apprentice for myself. So if you're interested, just get in touch. And also be sure to check out the video show Architect Tips. And now we'll get right on to the interview. I have with me today Anna Hoffman, and she is a data and applied scientist and program manager on Microsoft's SQL engineering team. She's also the host of the video show Data Exposed. So check that out on YouTube or on Microsoft. And she puts out so much content there. But Anna, welcome to the show. How are you this morning?
Hi, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me. I am doing really well. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, likewise. We might as well put out a plug for the Dev Intersection Conference because we're both speaking there.
Yes.
In December in Vegas. If you're not registered, go ahead and do that. What are you speaking on at that conference?
I am speaking on quite a few things, actually. I'll be supporting Bob Ward. He's doing a migrating to Azure SQL Managed Instance Precon. I believe I also have a couple sessions around building scalable, what is the title now? I'm trying to think. Building limitless databases or something like that, talking about the different scaling capabilities that Azure SQL has. I'm sure I'm doing several other things, but it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a great conference and, you know, we're all just super excited to get back in person. And what about Absolutely. You? What are you speaking about?
So both my topics are on Blazor, but totally different angles. One of them is Blazor architecture patterns. And then the other one, which is a really deep dive talk, is implementing your own model view controller pattern for Blazor components so that you can separate the layout and the screen logic, just like in so many other frameworks. So that'll be fun.
Cool. I have a session on Vue, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, Vue and Azure SQL database. And I'm pretty new to kind of the full stack side of things, or this, I guess that would be like a static web app side, but I haven't played with Blazor yet.
Well, there's so much. Yeah, just to touch on everything, it would take you so much time. But now you have your own video show, and there's probably plenty of listeners who've watched your videos. But for those who haven't, how did you land at Microsoft, and what are the high points leading up to what your current role is?
Yeah, that's a great question. Kind of like we all take these wild journeys in our careers. But I graduated university and I had an engineering degree, and I just knew that I didn't want to go do the type of engineering that I was doing. So I somehow got a job at Microsoft. They have a pretty great college hire program, and started working in their services business. So Microsoft Consulting Services. I was working as a consultant on services like Power BI. And through that, I learned a lot about data, and I actually realized that that was something I was super passionate about. So I then did what was then called the Microsoft Professional Program for Data Science. And then I went on and got a master's degree in data science online at Georgia Tech, go Jackets. I've just kind of been following what I'm passionate about. So after leaving Microsoft Consulting Services, I went into the AI engineering team where we were doing a lot with the first launch of Azure Machine Learning Services, actually. And I also did a lot with Azure Cognitive Services. And then one day I, you know, had some calls with some people on the SQL team and decided that the next journey would be to try to get SQL people doing more things in the data science and machine learning space. That's what I came over to do. But, you know, things change, and it turns out what we were really passionate about is trying to get people, get our SQL Server customer base and community base into Azure SQL. So for the past couple years, I've really been focusing on that. And in the past year, I've been focusing pretty much exclusively on Azure SQL database. So that's kind of how I got to what I'm doing now. As far as the show goes, that's also a funny story. The Microsoft has a studio called Channel 9. I'm sure some viewers have heard or seen the Channel 9 website. But I, one day, you know, I was talking to my boss and we were talking about how, hey, there's not really like any place on YouTube where people just talk about Azure data services. So one day I strolled into the Channel 9 studios and said, hey, can we have a show? And the executive producer, Gulnaz, was, you know, a wonderful, just believed in me. I don't know why. I had done no videos at the time. It was like, sure, let's revamp this show called Data Exposed. And that's kind of how we got started with Data Exposed. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Gulnaz is pretty good about pulling out the best in other people. She's good at that.
She's absolutely amazing.
There's so much in SQL, and a lot of listeners are still working with, you know, big, hairy, on-premise SQL Server clusters, while at the same time, Azure SQL has just been exploding. Do you have any idea for how many SQL databases there are, or how many gigs, terabytes, petabytes of SQL data is on Azure at the moment?
That's a good question. I should have done some research and come back with those numbers. But I do have a few numbers in my head. I believe just the SQL database, so SQL database and SQL managed instance, we have, I want to say, over 6 million databases. And then if you throw in SQL Server running on Azure Virtual Machine, that's probably another at least couple hundred thousand VMs. Now, I don't know how many instances they're running on those, but there's quite a lot of data under management. I'm trying to remember the number that we had reported out, but it was big. It's like petabytes and petabytes of data.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I remember when Azure SQL first went GA on Azure, and at that point, we kind of looked at it, and a lot of people looked at it and said, okay, it's not quite ready yet because I've still got to do all this stuff. I'm managing my own. And then Azure SQL came out with the managed instances, and it was just smooth as butter. It was easy, just, oh, throw a database on there. It just runs. I don't have to think about it and scale it up, scale it down, DTUs, all that. But now there's a lot of effort being put into Azure SQL VMs. What's the vision behind that? What's the strategy for why people now would want that? When people think of cloud?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, if you take a look back at our journey, like you were kind of mentioning, back in 2008, we announced Windows Azure as a company for the first time. And part of that, literally front and center on the PowerPoint slide that Ray Ozzie, the chief software architect at the time, said was Microsoft SQL Services. And that was Azure SQL Database. And that was the first kind of database as a service that we know of. But what we've kind of learned over the years is that not all of our customers are ready to just go straight to a database and straight to us being Azure or Microsoft managing most of the workload. So you're right. A couple of years ago, I guess maybe 2017, I want to say, we came out with Azure SQL Managed Instance. And this was still, you know, you get all those benefits of a platform as a service, but we're going to give you more access to the SQL Server running underneath. So instead of just getting a database, you get a whole instance, which means you're going to get all that instance scope capabilities that a lot of our customers are using today, not were, like machine learning services, DTC, database mail, SQL Server agent, you know, all those instant scope things. And the reason we went with that direction is because a lot of customers were saying, look, we want to move to the cloud, but we're just not ready for Azure SQL Database. So that's been really great for customers who kind of want to move into a managed service with their on-prem estate. And then you're right, we've been investing a lot more in SQL VMs recently. And again, similar reason, because we have customers that are coming to us saying, hey, you know, like I really want to get to Azure SQL Managed Instance or Azure SQL Database at some point. But at this point in time, like I have a few things going on. For example, like I need access to the OS. Well, you're not going to get that with a managed service. And a lot of our customers are using third-party applications that actually need that access to the OS, or they're just looking to move to the cloud really fast. So like with Azure Site Recovery, you could just fail over a bunch of VMs. And we've had lots of customers kind of do that at scale. But what I've seen is folks taking like kind of a phased approach. So like they'll get to SQL Server and Azure VM as fast as they can. And then once their infrastructure is up there, once everything else is up there, because you know we're not just moving the databases, right? You have to move that application, you have to move the networking, you have to move the processes, all that stuff has to move. So then what we see is once they land in Azure, then they start to evaluate and move some workloads to Azure SQL MI. And then we're seeing a lot of people using Azure SQL Database for more of like their new modern, like cloud native applications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. You can't just move one thing when your whole ecosystem is kind of used to low latency, high bandwidth, and you can't just put a wide area network hop in between those things. You kind of have to get it all into the fast Azure network for it to still behave properly.
Exactly.
Well, so what are the new things that maybe a lot of people haven't heard of in the Azure SQL space? Things that are just come out and are new and exciting.
Yeah, sure. So you know, the team is always working on a lot of new things. Always, what do they say? We move at the speed of the cloud. But the interesting thing is, like, a lot of things land first in the Azure SQL Database, just because it is a lighter experience and it's easier for us to push stuff there first. So I would say, like, some of the biggest things that have landed in even like the past couple years. One would be Azure SQL Database Hyperscale. So this is a service tier within Azure SQL Database where you can essentially scale up to 100 terabytes, but there's no hardware limitation stopping us from stopping you at 100 terabytes. And this is a fascinating, and there are some white papers I can share to include in the show notes, but this one's really interesting to me because what we did is we took SQL Server apart. And we basically took all the pieces apart, and then we re-architected SQL Server to run as basically a cloud-first solution. So in taking those pieces apart, we were able to now scale horizontally as well as vertically instead of being tied to like a single node or a single sort of VM if you have it. So Hyperscale has been really big, no pun intended.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I would say the other big one, kind of on the innovation side, is Azure SQL Database Serverless. So recently, I guess, again, this was maybe a year or two ago now, but recently we came out with this serverless capability, and similar to how we're kind of, exploring how can we re-architect SQL in the cloud to kind of give people what they want. And one thing we know about customers in the cloud is like one of the benefits is that you only pay for what you need, right? So serverless was us kind of taking this one step further. And I know we have lots of other services that do this, but with databases, it's a little bit different because you can't just kill the service when it's not being used or you would lose all your data. So what we enabled was a serverless, and the way it works is you can essentially set a minimum and a maximum amount of compute that you want to be able to use. So you could say, hey, go from one vCore to 40 vCores. And what we're going to do is we're going to auto scale you on a per second basis based on what you need. So if you need 4 vCores, then we'll give you 4 vCores and we'll charge you for 4 vCores. If you're no longer using those 4 vCores, then we implemented a new system to kind of do this cache reclamation so we can kind of take those cores away and not bill you for them. So this has been huge for our customers, and we've seen a lot of actually people who weren't even using SQL before now coming to Azure SQL Database for these serverless capabilities. So the auto scaling is one piece. I would say the other piece that's really interesting is this auto pausing. So you can essentially set an auto pause delay. So like if you're a dev, if it's a dev database, for example, all my like demo databases are serverless. But even if it's like a workload that, you know, maybe is only run during standard business hours, not at night, not on the weekends, then you could set up an auto pause delay. And when no one connects to the database, we'll essentially separate the compute from the storage. And during that pause time, you're only going to pay for storage because we've separated the compute. And quite frankly, the compute is the expensive piece, right? The storage is not very expensive. So we've seen a huge adoption in both the serverless and the hyperscale spaces. I would say those are kind of the biggest announcements that have landed in the past couple of years.
So if there's somebody out there, which there's tons of them, that are currently using the DTU slider bar, and you know they have like one of our customers is in the car auction business, and you know they weekends are more heavy for car auctions. In the middle of the week, not so much. So you know they're like, okay, they're the slider bar back and forth, and you know scheduling and changing it. Is that a candidate, it sounds like, to go to serverless and just that range and the changing, is that literally automatic?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, probably a great example because, this customer of yours could set a min and a max, and then on the weekends, it would scale up really high. And on the weekdays when no one's, you know, doing car auctions, from what I understand, like maybe the database would pause altogether and you wouldn't have to pay for any compute. Now, you don't have to set on the auto pause delay. Like one caveat that I try to remind people is that you know, you're used to having kind of your cache being loaded with all the things that you do, and it makes it fast for querying and returning stuff. But if we separate the compute from the storage, like you're going to start, when we reconnect it back, you're going to start with a cold cache. So this is probably fine for the example you were saying, maybe on Saturday morning, part of before the auction starts, you have someone go in and just ping the database, run some of the usual queries, so that when that first user does it, you know, they don't get hit with the cold cache thing. But we found a lot of customers, even with that being said, like a lot of customers are okay with this, and serverless works great. And again, you know, you get to choose. You don't have to choose between over-provisioning and overpaying. So maybe they scale up those DTUs really high on a Saturday, but then maybe it turned out they actually didn't need them.
Right.
So the auto-scaling part of serverless is going to help them with that for sure.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
That sounds like a big, big money saver. Because once with that DTU slider bar, you have to over-provision, because once your database is at capacity, bad things are already happening. And I've noticed Azure doesn't like to scale up on a database that's being slammed at 100%.
Yeah. That's definitely like a great reason. And who knows, like maybe the auto scaling capability is something we're working on to bring to other database services, database tiers. But for now, you have to be in the serverless tier. And yeah, there's great benefits there.
Nice. The bidirectional syncing is one of the shows that you had on your Data Exposed. Is that with all of the additions of SQL Server, or is it just some?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think you might be referring to change data capture or transactional replication. One thing that is like a new thing to learn with the cloud is, and just the fact that we have so many different options. Most of the time, I would say it's good. But sometimes it can be confusing because you will have these situations where some things are supported in Azure SQL database and not Azure SQL Managed Instance or vice versa. So off the top of my head, I am not sure which version CDC is available in, but I know that we've been investing heavily in the Azure SQL database space with CDC. And the reason for that is, like we kind of talked about before, like Azure SQL Managed Instance is more like a managed SQL server. So you're getting a lot of those capabilities out of the box, whereas Azure SQL Database is just the database. So we've been hearing a lot about bi-directional syncing, and we're also working on some other things, which unfortunately I can't share today. But we are hearing this comment a lot from customers, and it is something we're actively working on for all tiers of SQL, whether it's, you know, whenever that next version of SQL Server will be, Azure SQL Database, and Azure SQL Managed Instance.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have to plug your book because you've written a book, Azure SQL for Developers.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. And, you know, being honest, and I think probably it's clear from my experience, like I've only been in this space for, you know, a little over 5 years. So, don't just read the book because I'm part of it, you know. But what was a really cool experience about it is I worked with four other folks who have been in SQL for like 30 years each, you know, not cumulatively even. So that was really fun. Learned so much by working with them. And also I was just really impressed. Like I hadn't really spent a ton of space in the developer and database category before. So I was really impressed by some of the capabilities that is just built into the SQL engine, not even things that are like new per se, things like column store or things like memory optimized tables. Like there's lots of stuff in SQL, whether it's SQL Server or Azure, where, you know, we're just really thinking about development workloads and also the developer itself. We talked a lot about tooling in the book. So I would say, like, if you're newer to SQL Server or Azure SQL, this is a great place to start because we kind of cover all the bases and we also talk through, you know, kind of the what to use when around different scenarios.
Okay. Do you work in the space around deploying to Azure SQL, or is that another team?
To Azure SQL.
All the deployment tooling.
Oh, the deployment tooling. Yeah. So you mean like the portal stuff, the CLIs? Yeah.
It's constantly changing, and of course, there's open source tools. There's DACPack, but right. There's, you know, I don't think that we've settled as an industry what's the best way to, you know, create the schema to do incremental changes to it and the little data transforms you have to do when deploying new application versions. Oh, that needs some change of some sort to the database. We're still having that conversation, you know, and I'm looking forward to when the dust settles on that, but I was just wondering.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know if the dust will ever settle on that. Like, I think there is there's some folks from what I've seen that are like, very steadfast and hey, we're going to use like a DACPack essentially, and we're going to extract the schema, and then we're going to deploy the schema with the DACPack. And when we have changes, we'll just upload a new DACPack and use like in GitHub, like the Azure SQL Action or SQL Action to redeploy the DACPack. And that way we know we're going to get exactly what we want. And then I have seen people who are very committed to the scripting methodology where it's like, nope, we're just going to have, you know, 100 scripts or whatever. And if we need to change something, we'll just add another script. And when I say this, I mean, people on my team, even.
Yeah.
So like people have very different opinions. I think in the data science world, it's kind of similar to the, should I use R or Python, which one's better. But what I will say, like the good side of that is regardless of how you feel like doing it, like, you know, we're investing in both sides. So like, if you want to use the scripting approach versus the DACPack approach, like we're investing in new tooling to make both of those things easier, for example. And it's same with like, if you want to use GitHub Actions or Azure DevOps, like, you know, both of these things are owned by Microsoft technically, but we're going to keep investing in both because, you know, different people like to use different tools.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you've got some, you work on a lot of training and learning paths and learning videos. Do you want to plug those? Because they're some interesting topics.
Yeah, sure. I would love to plug those. So recently we started getting into Microsoft Learn. And the biggest reason for this was just the ability of the free Azure Sandbox. I don't know how many people listening have ever I want to go try this. Let me go start a free trial. And it's like, oh, my email address has been used before. Or, oh, I need to provide a credit card. And I'm not sure if I really want to do that. Or I hit the $200 limit. Now I can't do anything. Or in my organization, I don't have permission to deploy certain things. So there's been a lot of blockers we've seen over the past couple of years of people not being able to get hands-on. And that's so different from the on-prem world where it's like, SQL Server Developer Edition has everything in it, and you can just go download it wherever, run it wherever for free for however long you want. Within the constraints of being Developer Edition.
Right.
But
Developer Edition used to cost money, and now it's just available to everybody.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of like that journey where I hope there will be a time where you can just go get Azure SQL Database for free. And for some, there has to be some limits on it, but without all the hoops to jump through. So I hope that we get there. But in the meantime, Microsoft Learn is great because as long as you have an email account and some sort of subscription, so it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have any permissions. They essentially have a whole tenant called the concierge subscription through Microsoft Learn Sandbox. And so they can give you a free Azure resource group, which you can deploy resources in for 2 to 4 hours at a time. So that was a big reason we got into Microsoft Learn, so that you can get hands-on with Azure SQL Database and other services for free. And Bob Ward and I did this first with Azure SQL Fundamentals. But some of the ones I've been working on recently, which I'm more excited about because they're newer, is the one I released in May. I worked on with a colleague, Davide, and this is around trying to catch the bus. So we take in real-time bus data for the King County, Seattle area, and then we create these geofences, and you try to configure notifications for when a bus enters a geofence. So the idea is when your bus enters the geofence, you get an email and says, hey, you might want to go catch the bus. It's close by. So we go through this whole process of building this application keeping DevOps in mind. So for that learning path, we use GitHub Actions for everything, for Azure Functions, for Azure Logic Apps, for Azure Static Web Apps, for Azure SQL Database. We're using the DACPAC approach in that one. So that was a lot of fun. And I think it's not only a fun scenario, but it's a way for a lot of different people to get hands-on in a lot of different ways and get new experience. One fun thing is we wrote the learning path in three languages. So if you want to learn .NET, Node, or Python, you could go use any of them. And even for me, Davide wrote the Node part because I don't know Node very well. But it was so easy for example, to translate between the two languages because it was the Python code's right here, the Node code's right here, the .NET code right here. And you can kind of see how those languages are different. So even though that wasn't the purpose of the module, I feel like that was a really useful thing. And then you just learn about full stack. That's how I learned about Vue, because we were let's use Static Web Apps, let's throw something on top of it. And we've heard a lot about Vue, let's go play with it. So that's one that I think is really fun. Then the other one that we just launched, actually, depending on when you hear this recording, but we just launched it. It's called Deploying IoT Solutions with Azure SQL Database. Now for this one, and for all of them, I like to work with different people who are working on different big projects with customers. But there's a great guy on our team, Silvano, and he has been working with a lot of IoT customers who are bringing in billions of data points every day and building these huge databases and really needing databases that scale. So I met with Silvano and said, hey, let's build a template that anyone can use for an IoT scenario. And it'll deploy a schema to start with. It will deploy the Azure functions that brings the data from IoT Hub into Azure SQL Database, and there's like a starter Power BI, so you can kind of monitor what's happening. So that's been a really fun one because I got to learn a lot about IoT, and also now we're able to share it with folks. So we've actually seen in kind of our planning for this, we've seen some customers use this template to learn because, right, you can do it for free on Microsoft Learn, and then actually go and modify the template to use in their own production scenarios. So that's an exciting one, and that's a fun one. I don't know how much you've done in the IoT space, but it's a very cool space.
Well, a lot of IoT conversations haven't immediately included SQL Server as a part of that conversation. So that's interesting. How can people get to that template?
Yeah, sure. It's just aka.ms/AzureSQLIoT, and I can share that with you.
Okay. Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else that we shouldn't miss when pitching all the stuff about Azure SQL? And there's so much stuff. It's an exciting world there in the cloud database space.
Yeah, I mean, I think just to like be real with people, like I understand there's so much to learn and it's so hard to keep up. There's always new stuff that we're doing. One thing, the final thing that I'll plug, but also hopefully it's useful, is as part of Data Expose Live once a month, we stream a news update. So everything new across SQL Server and Azure SQL, we cram into 1 hour video each month. And we bring on the people who have made those releases to talk about what's new in the release or what the new capability is and why you use it. Now, if you don't even want the 1 hour stream because you got a lot going on, totally get that. There's a blog that you can go look at that just one a month is bringing it all together so you can figure out like where you want to go deeper next, whether it's a podcast like this or a video or a blog or just something new that's in the space. It's a great way to just stay up to date with everything going on.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll put that, make sure we get all that in the show notes so that the listeners can get to it. Well, this is great. Great conversation. And we covered a ton, that's for sure. So
yeah.
Thanks for coming on the show. And again, you're speaking at Dev Intersection in December in Las Vegas. So listeners can go and see you in person. We're excited to get back to
that. And you as well.
Yep. I will be there. Absolutely. And haven't sent out the announcement yet, but there will be I'll throw a party with Palermo the night before the conference. I do that sometimes at various conferences.
Oh, so kind of. I hope I can get an invite.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We don't have much of a security budget, so there's no bouncer at the door, if you get my drift. Everybody's welcome.
Just so I can sneak in.
Everybody's welcome. List.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for having me on the show. This has been fun and hopefully useful for folks.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. How can people get in touch with you? Website, blog, email?
Yeah. I think best thing is I'm on Twitter @AnalyticAnna. And if you want to stay up to date with the Azure SQL stuff, you could also follow @AzureSQL. But Twitter, you can DM me, connect with me on LinkedIn. Any way you want to contact me, I try to make myself available to the community as much as I can.
Very good. Very good. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.